Senator Mike Jacobson in studio today. And these wildfires, wow, really wreaking havoc, aren't they?
They really are. And, you know, I hate to mention this part, but you always start thinking, how did these get started to begin with? Mm-hmm. And when you figure that two of them were from prescribed burns. And I have to scratch my head and say, so it's dry as dry can be. Why are we doing prescribed burns?
I'm right there with you.
It dumbfounds me.
Yeah, I don't get that. I think they're going to have to, tighten the restrictions on prescribed burns, I think.
Every spring we tend to go through, every now and then you get a wet spring, but we've had so many dry springs, and we know what can happen. Mm-hmm. The damage, obviously it's still, they're not contained. We're still burning more acres. I think people think, the grass burned top of it, it'll just grow back. And it will, but not overnight. No. It's going to take moisture to get the grass growing again. These pastures are not going to be used this summer, so that you've lost all the summer grazing. If it burnt your pasture, you may have lost your bale piles. You may have lost your meadows, which you would be using for haying for next winter's hay. Mm-hmm. This will be a very expensive. We've had one loss of life, but you think about the amount of wildlife that have been caught in this and have been killed. Think about the animals, cows, newborn calves that have been killed due to fire, and just the massive costs of trying to treat the fires, trying to stop the fire, and then the aftermath. This is unfortunately we've had the Tyson mess, and now we've got this, and this could make Tyson look like a small thing. And I don't want to, and it certainly is not. Let's just say that. But yeah, I'm very frustrated. When I look down in Clay County where my farms are at, you insure your crop, and when you get into a dry fall, and your combine catches on fire and it burns your field and then hits the neighbor's field, who's liable? If a fire starts on your farm accidentally, but it starts on your farm, and then who's liable for the neighbor's loss of crop? And a couple of schools of thought on that, but you can be held liable. Mm-hmm. So I feel horrible for the people that have been caught up
too.
In this.
I do too, and anybody that's been displaced, for sure. Obviously, the legislature can't do anything about it this session, but I'm sure there will be probably legislation proposed next year, I'm guessing.
There could be. I think we need to really evaluate what really happened and what could be done differently, but I certainly think that there could be legislation on restricting these prescribed burns. If someone can go out and the Forest Service started their prescribed burn. Most of the land that's the fire damage has been on land that's owned by the Fire Service. They do lease it out for grazing, and so there's a lot of grazing land lost. But theirs, at least, is kind of somewhat restricted to land that they control. But when you look at the Cottonwood Fire, that's a whole different program.
For sure, and that moral one has burned over 500,000 acres.
Yeah.
That is just astounding.
It really is, yeah. And I have to give tremendous credit to the firefighters. They know how to attack these fires, but it's very, very difficult when you've got winds blowing like they have. There is no...
It's nearly impossible to do any containment.
Exactly,
yeah.
They do some back burning when they can, but back burning is almost like a prescribed burn itself. Sometimes you can do a back burn and it can spread, and all you've done is just made the fire bigger.
Yeah, the wind just pushes that thing along, and any barriers you try to create really aren't barriers.
Right.
With the wind, because it just carries it across
right.
ditches and roads, and there doesn't seem to be anything that can slow it down.
And so. You see some wind changes, directional changes, yep. which also are very complicated and frankly dangerous for the firefighters.
Yeah. Last week, the big news was that after 8 hours of debate over a couple of days, you advanced the mainline budget bill unchanged, and so that leaves the current budget deficit at roughly $125 million. So I'll allow you to talk about that in a few minutes.
Sure. Well, obviously, when we go through a general file debate, first round debate, 8 hours of debate before you get to cloture. We did have the votes to get cloture, which means the budget moves to the next round. Had we not had cloture, we would have had to start over on the budget. We effectively have, I don't want to say started over, but the debate going on behind the scenes now and the negotiations going on with the governor's office and with all the different factions to get us to select file, there'll be 4 hours of debate on that, and we will see some changes. And you can make amendments on general file, you can make amendments on select file, but then our select file vote, that's when we move to final reading, and there is no change. There's no amending once you get to final reading. It's you can debate it for 2 hours. But then it's an up and down vote, and if you're going to make changes, they have to happen really on select file. I do know there are several people probably interested in that. There was $3.5 million that was in the budget right now, did survive general file to provide funding for school choice for the. I think it's worth explaining so people understand what's involved there.
Mm-hmm.
President Trump put in the One Big Beautiful Bill a tax credit, okay, not a tax deduction, but a tax credit at the federal level, which would provide $1,700 of credit for those who gave to option enrollment and school choice. I know there are a lot of people contacted me. Well, that's money coming away from the state, and the answer is no, it's not. It's a tax credit, so that means they just get a discount on what they pay at the federal level, but it would have zero impact on what their state liability would be. If it would have been a tax deduction, then it would have reduced their state liability. So the federal credit has nothing to do with the state. The state would say it doesn't cost the state a penny. However, that isn't going to take place, and it's going to have a year delay. So therefore, for those kids who are taking advantage of the school choice plan that was passed by the state and then ultimately stopped, there's going to be a year lag before they're going to be able to have that funding. So the concern was, what do you do about the kids that are extremely low income, 185% of the poverty level? Those kids are not going to have the funding because there'll be a year delay. So should we try to bridge the gap? And so that was the methodology that was brought forward on that $3.5 million. It would fund those kids for 1 year, and then there would be no state funding after that. Clearly, the NSEA was opposed. I heard from many public school teachers that you can't do that. We voted on this. Yeah, we have. The question was, what do you do for those extremely low income kids? And if you look at most of the schools in District 42, other than Northrop Public, these are schools that don't get TEOSA funding, so therefore, if these kids were in a private school, they're going to have to go to a public school, and the public school is going to get $1,500, but that's it, to be able to pick up the additional educational costs they're going to have. So So at the end of the day, we're going to push some more costs onto the public schools and these kids that have to go to a public school as opposed to being in the private school they're in today. I've looked at both sides of this. I understand the arguments. I was on the fence in terms of doing the one-year bridge funding. I would have opposed permanent funding because I think the voters have sent their message. But I would say that it's going to be unlikely that that will survive the budget. I know there were two senators, Senator Brandt and Senator Reapy, who said that they would vote for the budget on general fund, but our general file, but they're going to vote no on select if that stays in the budget. And so I would expect that the Appropriations Committee will remove that $3.5 million from the budget and come back and with the revised budget and not have it in there. So that's probably going to go away. The other thing that there's really a lot of talk about, should we slow the tax cuts? In other words, I saw one proposal across my desk and I was getting lobbied on to, how about the last step down of the state income tax reductions? We were going to go to from 4.5 to 3.99, and that happens at the end of this year. The proposal was, how about if we cut that step down in half and only take half the step down and then stretch it out another year to be able to save some additional dollars? The other argument was, but if we did that, then there is a property tax relief fund. And believe it or not, people say, well, you guys aren't doing anything for property taxes. Well, of course we are. We have been. We're doing more every year. The fact your property taxes are going up isn't because the state's doing nothing. It's because your local political subdivision costs are going up faster. I mean, we've got $1.6 billion annually that the state is giving to political subdivisions across the state, and the property tax credit fund that you're getting on your property tax statement, that number is going up each year, and that's money coming from the state. So the question was, it's actually going to increase the amount of the credit this year. So there have been some in the legislature saying, how about we don't make the increase, we just allow the same amount that we gave last year. I would oppose that. I think there's a lot of pressure to get property taxes lower, and so I'm adamantly opposed to slowing the pace in which we are providing more property tax relief. So that, along with the income tax cut, and then there was also the idea to reinstitute tax on cigarettes, which was about a $40 million, it'd be on tobacco and vaping. That was about $40 million in additional revenue. So bring that bill back, which failed on general file, and then make these two tax cuts, and that would provide significant amount of new revenue. Not only would it balance the budget, but it would give us a little more room so that next year, if we have any other fallback in terms of a shortfall, we've got some cushion. I would say that the revenue increase year over year was $800 million. So let's keep that in mind, that as the state continues to grow, we continue to raise revenue. It's just that if you take away, create more expenses for us from the federal side, that's what's creating the deficit. So there's a lot of things to talk about. I'm very much in the camp that we saw state spending on all political subdivisions and all of government go up significantly since COVID, or as a result of COVID. Those spending levels have not come down, and they can. And certainly there is some fat in everyone's budget. And I think it's important that we wring that out before we start talking about tax increases. And so I'm still going to be pushing for cuts and then come back with only look at tax increases if we absolutely have to.
Okay. This article I'm referencing said that the Appropriations Committee approved the transfer of $5.7 million in interest from the Perkins County Canal Project Fund to the General Fund, and that was the only thing the committee recommended taking from the fund, and that says the amendment was rejected in a 30-9 vote.
Right. I think that what you find, and that's been some of the games that have been played really since Justin Wayne was down there, was how did he get funding for a lot of his pet Omaha projects? It was, well, let's go take interest earnings out of this fund and interest earnings out of this fund. It's not impacting the principal, so we're not reducing the fund. We're just taking interest. And that gets us back, of course, to the Veterans Assistance Fund.
Yes. Yeah.
Where all that's being proposed is to take interest from the fund. But I think, as it's been appropriately pointed out, but the only way that fund grows is from interest earnings. There's no other money coming into the fund. So if you spend money from the principal for helping veterans, the only way you replenish that is through interest income. So I would have to point out that the only reason I think the appropriations included taking some money from that fund was that they were going to use those earnings, that interest earnings to be used for improvements on veterans' homes, which would have otherwise come from the general fund. So since there wasn't general fund money available to do improvements in the veterans' homes, they wanted to look at taking some interest earnings off the veterans' fund, use it for making improvements in the veterans' homes. That's why you'll find that the senators that have veterans' homes in their districts were not opposed to taking that money out. I was the only Western area senator who voted against taking funding from the Veterans Fund. I heard loud and clear that veterans, yep, do not want that touched. I've always had a soft spot for veterans. I don't think you can even begin to try to replace what they've given us. And if I'm going to err on the side of something, it's going to be on the side of helping veterans.
This article concludes with a rather alarming projection for the next two fiscal years, 27-28, 28-29. New fiscal estimates are showing the state will face an $874 million shortfall. State spending expected to grow by 2.5%.
Well, let's keep in mind that you're saying the deficit grows to $800 million. Well, right now, if you look at the shortfall, I think when they were looking at that, the budget deficit for the first year was $250 million. So if you close that deficit, you have to take that same $250 million off of the $800 million. And then if you start looking at bringing other pieces in, that $800 million is really to grab headlines. The truth is that projected on out, that deficit would be a lot smaller than that. And if you do look at a state spending increase of, say, 2.5%, and you look at what revenue increases have been, the revenue increases would outstrip the state spending, and you'd be able to close that deficit. So we went through the budget in detail last week on the budget book, and unfortunately, so many of the headlines are coming from the way the data gets reported, and it tends to exacerbate the problem.
Mm-hmm. So when do we expect next round of debate on the budget bill to happen?
Next week.
Next week?
Yeah, we'll see that. I think there's some other bills scheduled on Tuesday, but I would expect that by Wednesday we'll be back on the budget again. And keep in mind, we have LB 1071 and LB 1072. 1071 is the mainline budget adjustments, the mid-year biennial budget adjustments, which happen every other year. We do that budget adjustments. LB 1072 is the fund transfers, where we talk about transferring from fund to fund. I get a lot of emails from people saying, vote against LB 1071 or vote against LB 1072. Well, tell me what part of LB 1071 or LB 1071-2 you oppose, because I'm going to ultimately vote for LB 1071 and 1072. What I've got to figure out is what parts of those two bills do we need to get rid of before I vote for those two bills. But ultimately, we have to, as a legislature, vote for those two bills.
Mm-hmm. What would happen if there was not enough votes to pass those things? Would there be a special session then?
The session would continue. Okay. And then if we couldn't reach an agreement, the budget would go to the governor, and it would be his. He would decide. So I would just tell you that if you'd rather just have the governor make the decision, then don't agree. It's kind of a motivation for the legislature to get it worked out.
Yeah, you'd rather have it be coming from the legislature. Have him just put a signature on it rather than him make the difficult
decision.
Now,
he does have the line item authority, so he does have the ability to go in and make line item cuts. Now, but you want to give him the ability to just do everything by line item, and you probably don't.
Sure. And I also wanted to ask you about Teresa Ibaugh's major bill reacting to January's Lexington beef plant closure. 921 is what it is. So what do you think of that?
Well, keep in mind that I get a little nervous about telling business and interfering too much in what they do. Now, if you're an employer and you've got, you know that ultimately you're going to have to close, you're going to need employees to be able to run your business in the meantime. Yep. So let's just take, for example, if a year ago, or if you go by those rules, Tyson would have given 6 months' notice that they were going to close. Would they have enough employees? They just will close today, okay? Because their employees would have all been coming to North Platte, getting jobs elsewhere, and pretty soon you don't have enough employees to complete the
shift. Yeah, if you
know
your job ain't going to be there, you're going to start looking for another job.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you've got half your people no longer care about whether they're going to show up or not, so they quit showing up for work, or they show up when they feel like it. And what about all the other people that are there? That means they've got more to do, or you've got all these cattle in the yard that are going to have to be processed, and you don't have enough employees to be able to run all the equipment and get them processed. I mean, there could be a major economic damage. So I'm very on the fence right now. I've got to see the rest of the details. But on the surface, I'm probably going to be opposed to it for that reason.
She wants to raise it from a minimum warning period or giving notice of closing from 60 days to 90 days, with some exceptions, it looks like.
Right. And I would say that the key to that is how do you ensure that you can keep employees in place to wind the company down, and I think that's where the challenges are. And so going from 60 to 90 days, I could consider. I think you get beyond 90 days and you just will close. I mean, it's hard, and which you can't. And so how much money you're going to lose in the meantime. So it really becomes you're better off trying to downsize when you can. But just like with sustainable beef, they've made it clear that it takes a certain number of employees to start the place up. To run the first head through, it takes so many employees. And so you have a critical mass that you have to deal with. And so it takes me back to the beginning. I think that employees can leave at will. And when you're a business that needs a lot of employees to operate, and suddenly you're losing a third of your workforce because they're taking jobs elsewhere, can you really appropriately wind down the business?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention here?
Not really, other than I would just point out again how much I am truly amazed at how we have volunteer firefighters in virtually every force. Now, North Platte has a paid and volunteer force, But virtually everyone else and all of these towns and villages, they're volunteer forces. And they're out here fighting these fires. Same thing with the EMTs. It is truly amazing that we have people willing to do that. And I'm astounded when I talk to firefighters, volunteer firefighters, how they use their own gas money and their own vehicles to drive to the fire station or to the fire, and in addition to donating their time and frankly putting their lives on the line to fight these fires. My hat's off to them. I mean, that they're real champions, real heroes, and we can't say enough. And you look at the I realize they're trying to do this in shifts, but it's not like we're overwhelmed with the number of firefighters available. And after a while, this has got to get really, really old. You get very, very tired. When you get tired, you make mistakes. So my hat's off to them. Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing.
Yep. Lift them up in prayer,
too. Yes, exactly.
They need strength, for sure, and alertness, for sure. Mike, thanks a lot. If they'd like to get a hold of you, they can email you or call your office.
They can call the office, 402-471-2729. And email is mjacobson@leg.ne.gov.
Sounds great. You have a good day. Of course, folks want to hear more about the legislature. You'll be at the Lincoln County Republicans meeting over at the Eagles Club this evening.
Well, this evening, yeah. Looking forward to it. That's always a good group. They have a lot of really good questions. And I think everybody knows they've been around me long enough. I don't pull any punches. I tell it like it is. And it's just like I do on the radio station.
Yep.
And sometimes I say more than I should, but you don't have to question what I'm thinking.
I'd rather have you be that way than just be kind of tiptoe around things that you think are going to solicit criticism.
Exactly. No, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
You know you're going to get criticized no matter what you say. So
that's
just
exactly
say what you think.
Yep, that's exactly right.
All right.
Thanks, Corey.